Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Movies That Whip Ass.
That's right.
Wow.
We do swearing. Extra now.
I said it. We were all thinking it, and I said it. I am not Gooey. I'm Adrielle, but I'm joined by my pal Gooey. How's it going?
Things have really changed now that you're in the driver's seat.
We are also joined by McKenna. How's it going, McKenna?
Good.
Almost, what awesome. Month is it?
I guess I did. I had a cameo, yeah.
Well, oh, and the James Bond one, right, because yes. I was like, we were just like, bring McKenna in here. I have a few questions.
Going to sleep, and I was like, all right, I'll come
in. That was at the beginning of... That was like the first Bond movie we watched together. Now we've watched like 12 James Bond movies since we've last
talked.
Oh,
hell yeah.
So, yeah.
I've been wanting to watch more of them, but then there's too many damn movies, too many damn video games. There's too much stuff out there. And don't even get me started on television. There's way too much of that shit.
Too much, yeah.
And we only watch like old television.
Yeah, true. We don't watch anything. Everyone's like, have you seen Severance or The Bear? And I'm like, I'm watching The X-Files.
Okay, but The X-Files whips really hard. I don't know. I have the same problem with, I'm a copy editor for my job. And so I read a lot just all the time, every day. And then, you know, people are like, oh, have you read this book? I'm like, no, because I'm reading all the time and I'm tired and I don't want to read. And I sometimes have that problem with movies. Not that I watch movies for my job, but just that I want to watch like shitty reality TV or something.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm just tired. I'm just tired and I want to watch TLC, and then I'm embarrassed to admit it, but here I am admitting it to my close friends and to the world.
I get that in all the time, but it's scheduled because I watch I keep up with professional wrestling, and it's not like my schedule's cleared those nights or anything. Like if something's going on, we'll skip it. But it's nice like on a Wednesday or a Saturday or even late on a Friday when nothing's going on and I'm like looking forward to it, and where I can just be like, tonight's the night where I just like lower my IQ for a second and just go
exactly,
ham, you know?
Exactly. The same way that I finished Blasphemous, and now I am playing Super Mario 3D World, which is just like also feels like lowering my IQ a little bit. It's a great game, but it is
you
just like bite-sized.
Turn your brain off
nothing.
A little bit, jump around.
Yeah, and I find myself having kind of a little bit of attention deficit while I'm playing, because I'll do one section and then be like, maybe I want to look at my phone now, which like I never am doing when I'm like playing a regular game.
Games with like loading screens do that to me big time, where I'm like, oh shoot, like I gotta, that's why I need a PS5 or whatever. It's because like I'll play whatever, Elden Ring or something, and it's loading and I'm like, this is the perfect opportunity to like get distracted on social media or whatever, yeah. You know, when it's like not that long, just wait, just be patient, you know?
Yeah. Just sit there and watch the loading screen happen and it won't take that long. There is another thing that, Tunic. I felt like the loading. No, I don't think it was Tunic. There was something I was playing where it was like the loading screen was just long enough that I was like, come on now. This is, it is 2024 and I am an impatient bitch now. So we got to get better at this.
Switch too, especially Switch.
But we did something really good for our brains this month when we watched, the British title is just Dracula, but the American title is Horror of Dracula because the single name had already been taken by an earlier film in, I believe, the 1930s. So they didn't want to get it confused. So they just decided to rename.
Is that too long? Is that too long? Or is that not? Or yeah, is that not long of a time to just like, if any of like the new Spider-Man movies, I guess, had been called like Spider-Man, it would have been like, you can't just call it
Spider-Man.
I read
that they were still. They had like started playing the original Dracula in theaters again.
Oh,
so they wanted something different to avoid.
That
like,
was
they were playing them,
I mean,
at the same time, so they needed something to, you know. I want to go see Dracula. Which one?
Yeah.
Well, now plus, you can just say, oh, I want to see Horror of Dracula.
Yeah, it was that was a very iconic movie, too. Like, very popular movie, I feel like. So, it is kind of like maybe you don't want to... It would be confusing, probably. Because it would probably still loom large, right? Like, even if it hadn't been playing. Mm-hmm.
I don't think I've seen the 1931 mm-hmm. version. Have you, McKenna?
No.
I haven't seen it since I was young. Like, I remember all of the, like... iconography basically but I wouldn't say I've like seen I've mentioned it before, like one of my childhood friends who was like really into horror, that's like why I probably saw a lot of horror movies like way too young, you know.
Yeah,
and that was, you know, he was into all the different like sort of like characters, which was kind of a thing that drew me into like all the, you know, slashers were really big in particular. But then, like, there was the universal, you know, like, he could get into, and I get this, it makes sense, I think, now, too, like, anything that sort of had a brand or, like, a lore that you could go back into. He was also big into, like, Three Stooges,
I mean?
I feel like there's a lot of, like, oh, like, things to nerd out about as a kid, you know? So, like, we definitely watched some of those, and I remember, you know, definitely the Bela Lugosi like sort of portrayal looms large in a lot of media for sure. But like, yeah, I don't really, well, it's one thing, it's hard to recall a lot of like specifics about any sort of Dracula movie for me, because like there a lot of them are kind of different versions of the same sort of story. And I remember like the aspects of them stick out, you know what I mean? So I just remember some of the iconography, some of the lines, but yeah, I don't really remember. Like, I couldn't like sit down and tell you about that movie really.
Yeah. I wonder if it's a more like faithful adaptation of the book, because I read the book a long time ago. And I, you know, I knew there were certain parts of this film that they had basically just like changed certain characters to, like, instead of being like his aunt, it's actually his wife, because it makes more sense to just do it this way. And Dracula doesn't actually turn into a bat in this version because they were trying to make it more realistic or whatever. But yeah, I wonder if there, I mean, there just have at this point been so many adaptations of Dracula. McKenna, what is your Goo was like, you know, I feel like McKenna might know a little bit more about this than some of us. So than either of us. So what is?
That's why, yeah. That's why,
yeah,
we
why
got McKenna
we recruited
here, you,
you for a third time?
Preemptively called her in.
So what's your, like, I don't know, history with it, or how many have you seen? What gave Gooey the impression that you knew some more about this?
Probably because I have talked about it a lot. I think I've read it at least three times.
Jeez.
I think I read it once, maybe on my own for fun. And then I read it twice in college for two different classes.
Wow.
I
want to go on the record. I've read it too. Okay. I have read it. And I saw a stage production of it when I was in high school. So, okay.
Sorry, go on.
Yeah, I read it in a intermediate English requirement for all English majors. It was like a 300 level class, and wrote a research paper on it. So I actually just skimmed that a few hours ago. I was like, oh, maybe that's got some fun.
What was it about?
It was mostly about like sort of an Irish interpretation of particularly Mina and a little bit of Dracula, because, you know, Bram Stoker is an Irish guy. Mostly wrote about sort of a more Irish take and like, you know, all the social, economic stuff, political stuff going on in Ireland, you know, at the time.
I actually did not know that it was written by an Irish person at all. I just assumed that it was like a London dude.
Yeah, that name sounds like I could buy it. I was like, that's a weird name in general.
I assume that it wasn't someone from Romania because it feels like, well, I don't know if I was racist. It definitely feels like this is not like a, this is like no one from Romania would be like, hell yeah, this is this is what I want the world to know about.
There's probably an, like, some creeping, I feel like, I think it even shows up in this movie, like some creeping, like, Orientalism, like fear in this, you know, like that part of the, you know, like I think you can you do kind of see that sometimes, like the way people will talk about like that region of Europe or whatever. And I don't know, I didn't prepare or like try to do much research because I was like I'm not hosting this one. I'm chilling.
Oh, yeah. In case anyone cares, we were like,
someone cares.
No, we were like, what? Well, since we switch on and off choosing the movies,
we thought it would be figured, kind of fun.
You know, give Gooey a break, give me some a little bit too much power, and just sort of see what happens. You know?
Yeah, you've gone mad with power. You're like crocheting right now. You're out of control.
Yeah, I'm actually undoing this sweater because I ran out of yarn, and so anyway, it doesn't matter. Not the point. The point is that I've done some research, not a ton. I do have some things to talk about. But yeah, so we were like, well, since we're going back and forth picking the movies, we might as well go back and forth hosting.
Yeah,
as well.
In something I saw, they talked about like the portrayal, Christopher Lee's portrayal in it. Like there's like a hint of like he's doing like a Fu Manchu type thing. So I think there actually might be even if it's just like subtle or more subtext, I think there is a little bit of, I wouldn't say like necessarily full on racism in it or whatever, but you know, it's just some of that fear of like a land that you kind of I don't know what it is like make up in your mind to get scared about.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's a little bit like Orientalist as well, and it's also like the gypsies like being kind of like magical and troublesome, and like the sexualization of these, of this like fantastical kind of character. And I think that like is it's very like very sort of that goes into the kind of canon of like capital O Orientalism. It's like hypersexual, a bit dangerous, from like some faraway place, really seductive, not just sexually, but in just terms of like sort of money and power. And
yeah,
vampires have gone so far beyond our friend Dracula that like it's sort of like it was sort of strange to like go back and watch this, and like it's hard to without having I've read like excerpts of, I was also an English major, but clearly a slightly failed one because I have not read a lot of these like canon things, but it's hard to tell going back, you know, from where we're positioned now, like where the myth, like where the myth like starts to sort of like switch into like the modern like tropes, you know, like when things were like fresh and actually scary, and like the ways that is then like remixed with something like, you know, Interview with a Vampire or what's that one, Something of the Damned,
Queen of the Damned,
or
Blade,
or obviously Twilight. Although Twilight's not terribly like
psychologically, it kind of messes with you. Yeah,
but yeah, so it's weird to watch it, and kind of I kept being like, is this like where this came from, or is this already iterating on, you know, the 1931 version and the book? I mean, of course it's iterating on the book, but like, you know, where are they taking liberties and where are they trying to stay true, and why? You know, I thought about that a lot while I was watching it. But I don't know, McKenna, had you seen this particular adaptation before?
I hadn't. I had been wanting to for a while. So when you We talked about it last month. I was pretty excited.
Yeah.
This I don't think I had ever really seen. Like, it, as, like, iconic as it is, I feel like, you know, kind of the other, well, there was either kind of the more classic, you know, Dracula interpretation that kind of sticks out in the cultural memory, or there were, like, the modern movies I saw growing up, you know what I mean? And so this was kind of, like, more of an in-between. And so, yeah, it wasn't... it, but it's one, like, so many people I know were always, like all in on, like, the series in general. You know, the Hammer, Dracula, Hammer horror, like, stuff. So it was... when you were saying, like, oh, I want to do something horror, it was, like... that was something I had in the back of my mind, is like, oh, I've always wanted to like really watch one of these seriously, you know?
Yeah. And I feel like, well, you had mentioned like, oh, you had a buddy who was like kind of like maybe the reason that you like watched a lot of like horror too young or whatever. I really didn't watch any horror. I mean, like, I don't know, the first scary movie, quote unquote, that I like remember watching was like The Ring in high school.
Oh, you know,
like the 2006 or whatever it is. And that I watched like at a sleepover. And it's cause in it, I hadn't really watched any horror really. Cause like my mom and grandma who I grew up with were both just not horror fans. Like my mom would be like, I can't get the images out of my head whenever she would like see a scary movie. And so she was always sort of trying to like protect me from that. But now that's why for the past, you know, a couple of months now I've been like, oh, I'm like down to watch like a scary movie, because I feel like I'm missing a lot of that, like, you know, foundation just in terms of like, you know, the canon of, I feel like I'm starting to catch up on like the fundamentals of like the like maybe 70s, 80s horror stuff, which I feel like is now kind of retro and like popular and being iterated on now as like the classic horror. But things like this, or things like Alfred Hitchcock, I feel like I'm interested in catching up a little bit, because I think that they're quite foundational and I didn't really... I'm missing that in my headcanon, you know?
Yeah. I mean, hopefully we'll have some more opportunity that we can just do that. We can make ourselves smarter on the show.
Yeah, I know. I hope that people don't get sick of, well, if you do, then you should watch them too, because they're pretty cool. Also at the credits scene at the beginning, which I always feel so dumb. I'm always like, wow, I always forget that they do the credits at the beginning of the movie. you know, it was like in red font, and then they like zoom in on Dracula's tomb or whatever.
That one's so hard, yeah.
Yeah, and then there's like blood splatter, and it's like bright ass red in the movie. And maybe for 1950s standards, it was a bloodbath, but I was like, oh, I want even more. But I forget that like we have had color cinema for like a very long time, and I always think like, oh, this is like something that happened in like the 1960s.
Yeah.
And it definitely happened in like the 30s or 40s.
I mean, it wasn't always like a uniform, you know, like, or it didn't like it could, I feel like at this time it could go either way, you know.
Yeah, I thought of that because of Hitchcock and how a lot of his movies he chose to do in black and white, either for like budgetary reasons or because for stylistic purposes as well. And a lot of those were like around the same time as this one. But this one, I was like, I can't even imagine what it would have been like in black and white, which is another reason why the 1931 version would be fun to watch, because blood and color is like such a big part of this movie that I feel like would be... they'd have to be much more creative with it.
For sure.
If they didn't have that option.
So, at the time, a lot of... some movies were actually submitted for, like, rating in black and white, because it would, like, obscure some of the blood, which, like, it would have been, like, pretty... This was, like, violent for the time.
That's what they, I don't know if they still do this, but when they would show clips from Ruthless Aggression era WWE, where they would just have these really bloody ass matches, when they would show, like, you know, highlight clips sometimes, like, it would be in black and white. And it's still like, this is horrifying.
Hell yeah. It's like when you see, well, I suppose it's a bit different, but I was going to say, it reminds me of when you see something on like either a computer camera or like a security camera, and you're like, it's a little bit grainy. Yeah,
found footage.
Yeah. The effects were rad. And,
oh yeah.
Especially, I mean, the
one in particular.
What do you mean? Which one are you referring to?
The big, it's like the big finale.
Oh.
When they cast the light on him. Spoilers, Dracula gets killed or whatever at the end. But when the sunlight, yeah, that was a really cool special effect. I had seen that, I guess they even like cut their shots like missing from that people have like tried to track down and like restore or whatever. But even without it, I thought that was, it was pretty gnarly.
It was, it was rad. Like, I don't know exactly what I was expecting for it. I think I was expecting something like that felt a little bit more, I don't know, like a stage version. It does look very much like, you know, I don't know, it reminded me of like stuff in like Terminator when it's like you see his face all jacked up and like you have like the fake skull underneath, and like, you know, it just is like, still is like such a, I thought that the two things that stood out to me as like really nasty were his bloodshot eyes.
Oh yeah.
Which I thought were pretty unnecessary, and that's why I liked them. I was like, man, he, like, why are his eyes bloodshot? That doesn't seem like that would like have to happen as a vampire, but I still thought it was tight. And I also really liked when they would get bit, that the prosthetic had it like so that there were the puncture mark, and then it was like raised around it, so it looked all like infected or something. And they just looked like so much more gnarly than just like two little puncture wounds in your neck.
Yeah, they're like textured or whatever.
And I also really liked when they had the crucifixes. And then they would like hold them, and then their skin would get all like fucking burned
the
off.
The crucifix was a solid item in this for sure.
Yeah.
Like pretty iconic, but I had some great moments that I liked involving the crucifixes. You remember the one? There's one where like towards the end when Van Helsing's kind of like, they're still, it's, they don't go back to the castle yet. And they find out Dracula's sleeping in the basement or whatever, and they kind of have a little like upstairs downstairs, like,
oh, that was awesome,
like,
that was,
they're kind of going all over the house like, but there's a part where he I think it's like when he realizes it, and then Dracula's there, and he's like, oh shit, and he's like gonna chase him, but he like, he stops and he pulls out a crucifix. And he, like, just plops one in his coffin. And I was like, good thinking. I just, like, imagine him having, like, a whole tool chest of those little crucifixes. He just kind of, like, drops them all over the place, you know?
And this is same with that, with the little girl. There's a little girl in the movie who is, like, I thought for sure. Then I was like, okay, it's the 1950s. They're probably not going to kill off the little girl, but they might. You never know. Mm-hmm. And
the threat of it is there.
Yeah, and
know?
he gives her like a big giant like crucifix on like a rosary chain, and he's like, "Don't take this off." And it's like the biggest crucifix, like it's huge and made of silver.
They look cool.
Yeah, they look badass.
Good prop.
Yeah, and I also wanted to mention about the some of the like minutia of the lore of the crucifixes. Jesus doesn't have to be on there. The body of Christ. And I noticed,
you just mean for like vampires to get,
yeah, in this movie, right? Like,
yeah, okay,
when Van Helsing is like in the final altercation with Dracula, just grabs two candlesticks and then like,
yes,
like crosses them so together.
That's my other favorite moment.
He even like rotates it.
He rotates it. So cool. That was so sick. What that what that made me think of, I sent you this video earlier. It's really the only thing I looked at. Was I was kind of curious just about like the sequels and what they all entailed. And there's this video by Cinemassacre, who's James Rolfe, the angry video game nerd, discussing the sequels to all the sequels to this movie. And he said, this sounds fascinating. There's one in which the protagonist is actually an atheist, and he uses the tools that you associate like against Dracula or vampires or whatever, but it doesn't work because he doesn't believe
in them.
So my retroactive reading of this is that, you know, Van Helsing, like, obviously his faith is so powerful here that he can just like make crucifix out whatever, and it fucks with Dracula, you know.
Man. Oh my god. I was just like, oh, so it doesn't even have to be anything. Vampires are weak. It doesn't even have to be a real crucifix.
He goes into I think this is a good video, because he talks about some of other weaknesses that come up in the sequels. They have to like make up new ones for Dracula. Like in the second one he appears in, they have to like be like, oh, they also are weak to like running water.
Running water.
That's a like you can't cross. They can't cross.
Okay.
They can't cross the threshold unless they're invited.
There's like
in
a whole like thing with the ship in the book.
Oh yes, like, that's right.
I forget exactly.
You mean that movie that just came out?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, there were further ones too, and he was just like pointing out that like, oh yeah, Dracula is like kind of actually got a lot of weaknesses.
They kind of nerfed him.
They nerfed him. Yeah.
Can't transform into animals or mist. He can't.
I think he does in the we were talking about the 30s one. I think Bela Lugosi do that, but
this one in particular.
Yeah. Can't turn into mist, which that's pretty crucial for when you're trying to like get through the mist gates. Like, it's cool when you like when you learn to double jump or like float, like that opens up a lot of areas you can get to in the map, but the mist gates are the really crucial spots you need to get to.
You're gonna be looking up a walkthrough if you can't find the fucking mist thing.
This Dracula would be fucked if he was in Symphony of the Night, for sure.
And what's the one? Sorry, I won't talk about Twilight anymore. But
no, that's cool. We can talk about Twilight.
The thing about the vampires in Twilight is that they can be out in the day, but they sparkle. But what?
Yeah.
What are
some people say? But I don't really actually understand that. Is that just all it is?
Yeah, they just sparkle.
I've only seen like two scenes from Twilight. One involves her baby. So weird scene involving her baby.
Yeah, that's weird.
And I saw them play baseball, which was like,
cool.
One of the best scenes
that's
I've seen
very
in any
cool.
movie. So
that's the best thing to come from the movies.
From what I imagine, they're some of the best movies. But so they just sparkle. Okay.
Have you read the books?
Yeah.
What team are you on?
Yeah. Oh, I forgot about that.
I was a team Edward.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. This is really good to know. Did they have any like, what were the vampire characteristics and weaknesses apart from the sparkle?
They are kind of weak. I'd say their greatest weakness is werewolves.
Wow.
Like,
convenient.
The werewolves can totally F them up.
That would be a bad weakness, for sure.
And, like, it's kind of crazy, because you can't just, like, stake them. You have to, like, totally, like, rip them up and burn them.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Pretty convoluted.
They're a little OP.
Oh, okay.
I think that was similar. There was something like that in True Blood.
Forgot about True Blood. Talk about
They burn the fuck up, though. There's some crazy scenes of that.
Yeah, they can't be in the sunlight at all.
You know,
we're
what was
talking about the canon vampire
the
stories
coolest
right now.
Thing. Twilight did have a really cool vampire thing. Was that like a lot of the vampires had like an extra ability that was like you know, a lot of times it was something about like as a human, they were maybe particularly good at something.
Oh.
It might get amplified as a vampire.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's like a vampire that can see into the future.
That's crazy. That could be its own hook for.
They're kind of like I think it's the last book where they're kind of gathering a bunch of vampires. Now they all have these cool different abilities, and it's all just kind of glanced over, and we're like, wait, you could do a whole series just on these guys.
Well, this I don't want to take you too off course. This reminds me of something else entirely, but I think that is a great hook for a series, and I think there are things that are approach that for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I was not disappointed. I was absolutely sure that the vampires in this movie were going to turn into bats or into some. They were going to shapeshift in some way, but they didn't, and they made a point to like talk about it. They were like, "Nope, that is a common misconception. They definitely do not shapeshift into vampire bats. That is not what happens." I was like, "Okay, fine. You are the expert, Van Helsing, I guess." But I was like, I guess it did seem like they were trying to sort of ground it in like a bit of realism.
Yeah, I would say so.
Which I thought was kind of cool.
Like when you you know, like the, well, we saw the clip. It's like the one of the iconic clips from the Lugosi movie is, you know, he's doing the whole like, ooh, the children of the night. And he, you know, he's kind of like, it's very, you know, it's definitely, it's like spooky, scary, but it's a, you know, it's definitely a bit more of a outward thing, I guess. Like it's a bit goofier, I would say, but like in this, I feel like the portrayal of Dracula is he's like a scary, like he's like a predator, you know. he himself, the man, is like a monster. He's almost like a serial killer type thing, but he's like just slightly heightened, you know, just slightly supernatural, but like really just like the physical portrayal of him, like the guy, is already very scary.
Just
with like the heightened things, the eyes and the teeth, you know, that type of thing. And not a lot of and I think like kind of that more like human nature of it makes him scary, especially when he goes into monster mode like early on in the movie. It's like then it doesn't shut off. Like in the beginning, he's like, you know, your cordial guy. But then after that, like, he doesn't even, like, say much, you know. Yeah. And you don't think of him, you don't see him as much doing these, like, spooky promos, you know. Like, he's more just like, I'm gonna fucking kill you type thing, you know.
Totally.
I had heard, I don't know if they were referring, because this was in that sequels video, and they talked about it more in the other sequels, but I could see that here where Christopher Lee, like, one, he didn't want to do most of the sequels, I guess, but also he said that the dialogue was all really bad, so he like refused to like speak a lot of the lines they wrote for him.
Whoa.
So like there was in a lot of these movies, like there's like, he has lines in this, I guess, in some of the sequels, like he says even less. Like one of the movies he said he counted, he only spoke like 28 words.
Whoa.
So, which is, you know, not much less than this movie. He only has like a scene or two, really, you know. So I think that has a lot to do with it, too. You know, like, it really just is like, he just kind of like embodies it in his appearance and everything, you know.
Yeah, he's, I thought it was interesting when, because again, I'm not, I wasn't super familiar with how the story was gonna go, but like, you know, it's called Dracula, and I knew that he would be sort of the villain, but it seemed like he wasn't the star, right? Like Peter Cushing was the star, who was Van Helsing, We can talk about him in a second, but Christopher Lee was like, he just carried the film, and it's sort of a testament to, like, you know, some of this obviously is like because the whole movie is like about Dracula, but like, it, I mean, none of it would have worked if he wasn't just like so fabulous, like the, like, and like, you know, weirdly sexual without it being, you know, sexual in like a 1950s kind of way, mm-hmm. without it being like totally like, I don't know, like scandalous, you know, like it still was very British and like classy in a way, but it was like that they were really trying to like sex it up in this, like, not even like sexy, but just sexual.
Absolutely. It's not a coincidence he's like praying at all these people, like they're in their beds, you know what I mean,
in the middle of the night,
coming in. Yeah, the sexuality is a core part of this, like I think the Dracula mythos, I think. What's your take?
No, I see a lot of people say that, like,
yeah, we're gonna beat them up.
They made Dracula, you know, they added all this sex to, you know, an adaptation. I'm like, no.
We're talking about Bram Stoker's the Coppola Dracula
novel.
This in general.
Yeah. No.
Okay.
Just there's definitely sexual subtext in the original novel.
Yeah.
It's not like what? It's not subtle either.
It's also about a bunch of guys who are afraid of this guy from this, like, is this country in Asia? We don't know. You know, like they're from Britain. They're measuring skull sizes or whatever, you know.
Totally.
And they're afraid of this foreign guy coming and getting all their wives, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, it's certainly some of that,
right?
Like, sexuality and like the fear of, you know, the promiscuity or whatever of their wives is like an aspect of it.
There's also even like some stuff with Jonathan in the book where, you know, Dracula's three brides are kind of starting to advance on Jonathan, and Dracula gets pissed.
He sucks him off.
He's like,
no, that doesn't happen.
No, I forbid you. I said he was mine.
Yeah, he's mine. This is my boy.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Did you see stuff about that? Were people complaining about?
I think
subtle.
I think I don't see sort of like subtle complaints about it in the other one. And I see mention of it as if it's new. Where I see complaints about it is in the Coppola version. Yeah.
I think his primary focus in that movie of like, not just like the love / sexuality is kind of like,
I think
the passion is like what he took from the story, and he decided to make his movie about that, which I think is sick to like be like, I want to focus on this aspect of it. Like, otherwise, like, why are you even making the fucking movie if you're not trying to, like, give it your own sort of spin, you know?
I think he, like, basically takes all of the source material and just turns it, dials it up. It's just all amplified and, like, maybe coming
it's like face off
of, like, 80s horror, it's pretty campy.
It's very campy, yeah.
But
that's a different movie. Sorry.
we're getting into a different movie.
It's one of our collective favorite movies.
I do want to mention, like, that is, they do add, like, a romance. But it's a pretty faithful adaptation.
The Coppola one.
The Coppola,
yeah. Yeah, definitely. That's the thing in one difference that I know is there's a lot more in the book, and I feel like in that there is a lot more espionage.
Oh, okay.
Like where they're like Dracula is, he comes to England not as like he comes because he makes like the, like Jonathan Harker does like a real estate job for him, and
then
he goes, and they're fine, they're cool, they're homies or whatever. He has the issue with the brides or whatever, but you know, it's whatever. And then Dracula is just kind of like a man about town for a while, you know what I mean? And so there is sort of that thing of like, people don't, it has a lot more of those scenes of people are like, you know, that Mr. Dracula guy, he's a funky guy, you know. It's always so funny in this movie too, where they're just like, oh, like he gets a note and he's like, you know, like, make yourself at home, Dracula. And I was like, I would be so scared.
Like, oh my God, Dracula.
I love that he was a librarian too. Not Dracula, but the other guy. Like, he's coming take care of his library, which I know
he's
not
doing
in
like
the book.
A land deal.
Yeah, I was like,
and
surprised at how different this story was.
And he's like legit. I think it's because it's like they want to just get into it. Like the movie is, mm-hmm. it's a quick movie, so they're just like, let's get into it. Because mm-hmm. I love how he is like, because Jonathan, right? He does just go there to do the deal. There's not an issue. Mm-hmm. Where in this, he's like, I'm here to kill this guy.
Yeah.
He's evil.
Yeah,
he knows. Yeah. Yeah, and then he just dies right at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, he survives in the book.
You think
I was
he's
just
gonna
like,
be
oh
a main
my God.
Character,
he's
main
just
character,
dead already. You know? And.
Well, you don't, because, like, you know,
and
Van Helsing is.
Fiance is Lucy? I was so confused for a minute.
That was just weird. It didn't really, like, matter, though. They just kind of, like, swapped the names, right? Like,
I mean, I guess, like. Because they decided to kill him, like,
oh,
they, you know, Mina and Jonathan both survive to the end of the novel, and mm-hmm. I don't know, I feel like maybe it would have been weird to kill off one of them and not the other if they were a couple.
Yeah, they wanted, I think the reason was I guess they could have sent someone else, but I think they were, you know, borrowing from that scene, but they wanted to get it to, like, there's no question about Dracula's deal. You know, he's just, like, the monster we're fighting. That's kind of the whole, you know, establishment. And I feel like they did that really well. Like, I loved when he goes to the town, and it's like, they basically all know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. They're like, they can't do shit about it, you know? And they're like, we just don't talk about Dracula.
Yeah. They don't seem like terribly afraid of him, but they do feel like they don't want anything to do with him.
We have to keep his name out
My
of our
My name
mouths.
Out your mouth.
Yeah, that was another... Because in the novel, they definitely know about Dracula, too.
Yeah.
But, you know, they also are like expressing concern for Jonathan when he's traveling. They're like, you shouldn't go there.
Yes.
It's a bad idea. He's like, oh, okay.
They were right. Yeah.
You should have listened to the townsfolk. The nice Romanian townsfolk.
Because the novel is basically a found footage novel. It's all like letters and, you know, newspapers and things.
Like, you like almost have to glean like context from certain things, you know what I mean?
Okay, I gotta read it down.
Very cool. Which they
so that was, you know, a
there's
nice
a bit of that here. Jonathan's just, like, journaling in the beginning.
Yeah. It's good to see that stuff in in the movie.
It helps to get your point across really quick, you know, where he's like, I'm
gonna
kill him.
It can be sort of inelegant. Here we go. In the same way when there's like a therapy, you can give like all of this childhood backstory just like on the couch with the therapist.
Here's all my baggage, yeah.
Kind of like what you mentioned, like, I'm here to kill him. I come bearing a wooden stake. he kills off the other person, like that the first bride of Dracula, and she like turns into like an old woman after he.
That was sweet.
And I had never really thought about how nasty it is to like be driving a stake into a body, but because all of them had to have like a hammer.
Yeah,
gruesome.
I used to, you know, Buffy just shoving it in and dusting them, you know.
Totally, the '90s way to do it.
Yeah,
that's where it really saw like where I think the choice to make it like realistic works, because like it really, you know, it's like, yes, like they're a monster or whatever, but it's like someone who is like a person you're doing this to, so there is something like scarier about that, you know, like you just like, yeah, the dusting is like, it's the difference between when enemies just disappear in a video game or their corpses
are
remain.
Just saying to like pry their weapons from their cold, dead hands, and you're like, guess I needed this crossbow.
It's Doom versus GoldenEye. I'm in like this mindset now.
Also, I really fell in love with with Van Helsing. I thought he was so, I thought he was so cool and sort of like British in this way that it was like just so attractive in a way that I just wanted to
He's a comfort character.
Hang out with him. I don't know. I liked him. I liked him so much, and I wasn't like necessarily expecting anyone to really stand out. I kind of came in just being like, I love Christopher Lee.
But, he has like a Sherlock type vibe to him.
Like
when I read some of those stories, and it's just like he just seems like, I don't know, like you trust him here on this Dracula thing. Like he knows what he's doing, you know. And he's definitely like, again, more of a grounded sort of presence, I guess, compared to even other portrayals of him that I've seen, depending on the movie. Like this felt like this was like the most, like he gave it more of a human, like relatable sort of characterization to the definitely. Character. I don't definitely. Really remember how that is in the novel, but you know, he's like insane, like in, whatever, like the Coppola one, it's like Anthony Hopkins and he's like insane or whatever, and I guess then there's like was it Viggo Mortensen? Remember the action like Paul W.S. Anderson style Van Helsing movie,
the one that was just called Van Helsing, right?
Yeah,
wasn't that
it was fucking Hugh Jackman.
Hugh Jackman. Hugh Jackman.
You know, it's similar, like not similar guy, but like in that era, like they're both these like rugged guys from the respective franchises they're in. But so anyway, Peter Cushing has a more of like, he like, he's just like, he's a real guy, and he's like, his just like, he's, his power is that he is just like really good at like, and he's really smart, you know. He's good at his job.
I think he's definitely like a combination of characters, because in the novel he's sort of a, you know, he does come to help, but he's kind of this like mentor to the four guys who are like battling Dracula. They've pretty much they've kind of condensed
which
kind of a whole team of like vampire hunters.
It's in a team
the novel. So
it robs it a little bit of the, you know, the Coppola movie has this sort of Dude's Rock kind of vibe to it, with there's the cowboy, like there's like, they're more of these like outlandish team of characters, and you're like, all right,
dialed up
here. You've got it a little bit, but in the British sense, where you've got these two fancy lads, you've got Michael Gow, how do you say his name? Alfred. We know him as Alfred from the Batman movies, but he's teaming up here with Peter Cushing, and they have sort of like a, you know, like a Holmes and Watson type dynamic, you know, but it's not quite as, you know, exciting, but I like them together. I think they were a good pair.
Yeah.
There's some lighter moments and like some, like a little bit of like humor, I guess, like funny parts, but I would say, yeah, I wouldn't say they're like jokes or anything like that. But yeah, that totally, the vibe of the movie really matched that. Like, yeah, when I think of this movie now, I feel like that the image that you said of Christopher Lee with the bloodshot eyes, like that is like the vibe of the, it's either that or like, you know, just some of the more quieter, like almost cozy elements to the movie. It's like those two, the yin and yang of those two moments, you know.
Yeah, it's either him doing that, or speaking into that strange recording gramophone thing in his studio. One thing that I also commented on when we watched Out of the Past, which is the 1947 movie, I guess, is the score. And I love black and white films. I'm really liking, you know, a lot of the like 1950s sensibilities that I'm discovering through watching these older films. But I really am not a fan of like the score of these like older movies. The like super dramatic, like blaring. I don't know. I wish that I liked it, because there are so many things about these like older films that I really love, but I find the music to be like, I actively don't really like it very much.
I mean, I like a lot of classic film scores for sure, but I don't know. I feel like, yeah, those two movies in particular are ones that, like, they're ones where I enjoyed it, but like, yeah, it's not, they're not ones that I also like, feel like I'm like, when you say that, basically I'm not like, are you kidding me? Because they're not ones that I like have a lot of like reverence for as much. But I mean, I enjoyed it in this movie. I thought I kind of like that vibe, I guess. I don't know, that vibe works for me.
Wondering if it's sort of like a relic of like silent films, where I guess, like, you know, not silent like with the when you add in like music, it's kind of, doing like, a lot of fills. Yeah, you don't have the dialogue.
I do like feel like there's kind of a middle ground. I feel like I like a little bit better. I don't know if it's specifically to time, because there's older films to this that have really standout scores, and there's modern films that do too. But I do feel like sometimes in certain movies, like, you don't even notice it as much anymore. You know what I mean? It's almost designed to not be noticed as often. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's, I feel like there's a middle ground. I feel like there's some great, I feel like 70s, 80s scores in particular, where like they have these big sweeping, like, I mean, not to bring up Star Wars, but like Star Wars is a great example of that, where they're constantly hitting you with those themes. Mm-hmm. And it's like,
well, Lord of the Rings is like that too. Hell yeah. You know, Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, that's what I thought, like, I was thinking of.
Yeah, it has, and that has a hugely like bombastic orchestral sound.
It's the Christopher Lee.
yeah. Well, that's one thing too. Like, you know, when like, definitely that probably looms large over his career, because he's played Dracula more times than anybody. He played Dracula in an Italian movie that adapted the same story. So he's done the same like movie twice. Cool. Well, not really, but you know.
Yeah.
So you know, that was a big part of his career, and I'm sure like when he's cast in these roles in Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, like the vampiric nature of him is definitely something I think in the outside of him just being a terrific actor, like, I think they're trying to channel some Dracula, wouldn't you say?
His name is Count Dracula to Count Dooku.
Count Dooku is his name. And in that sequels video I was listening to, they played one of the later movies. Dracula gives this like epic evil speech, and it really made me think of Saruman, like some of his, you know, moments. Yeah. And I'm like, okay, like that's cool. I think like both of those, there's supernatural elements to both of those characters that I think like Dracula or like vampires like graft really well onto, like evil wizards, basically.
Yeah.
Dracula, evil wizards, you know.
Yeah.
You can see where he would be good at both.
And there was like an aspect of like Peter Jackson having like such a horror like background, or like just sort of like sensibility about the Lord of the Rings movies. Like, they are so,
yeah,
they are like so like true horror movies. Mm-hmm. And I mean, not really, but they're just such strong elements of that like genre in there. I think that it felt like that was just like a perfect like kind of pairing of like director and actor, and for such like an evil role, you know, fantastical evil role is pretty cool. That was the only reason I knew who Christopher Lee was, because of Lord of the Rings. And I recently saw the second one with the live orchestra. Speaking of orchestras,
oh, that's so
my
cool
mom came into town and we saw it. And it was pretty
that's
rad.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I would love
but that
that
score just whips so hard. you know, it's like I like orchestral like music, and it can be like done so well. I mean, obviously there's so many examples, and I wonder, McKenna, like what you were saying about how like maybe it's like it was some of the growing pains or like the trajectory of silent film into like, you know, sound.
That's a good question. Like I wonder, because different eras of music, of like film, like have kind of their own like ways of operating, you know. So I kind of like, I don't know the process of this like era as much, you know, like whereas like you can kind of, I don't know, it's still like somewhat foreign to me, you know, like the amount of movies I've seen, it doesn't, I don't know, it's not enough to like make a call.
Yeah.
But if I get the reaction. Yeah,
if there's some nerd out there that knows about you know, 30 to 1950 cinema music, I would love to know more, because I think that you, my friend, have something that not a lot of people have, and that is niche knowledge about about this particular subject. But I loved this movie, thought it whipped hard. It just makes me want to watch more horror things, and I feel like it, like the more I watch, the more my bloodlust grows. So
you're gonna become a horror freak.
I'm turning into one of those weird horror, I'm turning into a horror guy. That's what I was very happy to watch this film. I'm very happy that you that you suggested it. And is there anything else that is there anything else you this burning
do you have any other Dracula? McKenna usually have some Dracula ponderings.
There's so much to the novel has like has so much in it. I do think this kind of got the Dracula, like the character itself, the horror essence, well, even if it didn't get a lot of the other details in there.
Would you like, say it's almost got the horror different... of Dracula?
it's almost a different story. But I think they did the characterization of Dracula himself really well.
Okay. Like,
just, like this imposing, like scary dude.
It is, yeah, it's something it is like the physicality, I really think, is what it has a lot to do with it, and like the way he carries himself and stuff.
How does this stack? I have two questions. One is, I'm alive in 2024 picking up Dracula. Do you think that it's still a good read right now?
Definitely.
Oh, hell yeah.
Definitely.
Okay. All right, sweet. Because it was written in what, like 1880 or something, right? I feel like I looked this up.
Yeah, I think late 1880s, or published late 1880s.
Yeah, well, it takes place in 1885, so I just assumed it was like kind of around the same time. But okay. It holds up, eh? This is good to know.
It may not be as like cool to you if there are, because I don't know, I haven't read a lot of books in my life, so maybe there's a lot of books like that, but like the format of the book, like it's still like I read it when I was in high school, so a long time ago, but like that still like really like was really scary to me. Like the way that it was like almost found footage style, because you didn't get the full picture necessarily, and like the POV change, and it kind of puts you off your guard a little bit, and like You know what I mean? And I feel like I have not read a lot of books that really drew me in like that. And I think the format of the way they told the story, like, is still, like, I think that is what makes it stand out over, like, other things I've read.
Hell yeah. Okay, cool. This is awesome.
And it's a good story in general, I think. But
Right, because it's such a, it's like the obviously the myth of vampires and Dracula as a character and all this stuff just has been, you know, has mutated so much, as we've talked about, you know, so it's, as someone who's never read the original, it's, I wasn't sure if the original itself sort of you know, still held up, or if it was like, oh, the ideas are cool and it has, but like the original has now kind of been eclipsed by what has followed. So that's cool. That's awesome to know. I'm going to pick up Dracula.
Yeah.
And then McKenna and Gooey. Where does this stack up in the Dracula movies that you've seen?
Well, it's, you know, of the I would say of like what's cool about the three kind of iconic ones, given that I don't fully remember the Universal one, is that they do present it in a different, like they all have the same elements in them, but they focus on something different, and they're like a different style of movie, you know. So like the Coppola one is probably my favorite, but that one is like, it's like a blockbuster movie, you know what I mean? It's like this big epic production, you know. Mm-hmm. Where this is like this quieter, like like I said, the more physically imposing, realistic, it's like gritty, you know what I mean? So like it's hard to rank them, but you know, what do you think?
I mean, I think this one definitely has like a scarier Dracula, though the Coppola one does have some more of, I guess, the Dracula transformation horror kind of stuff.
That is cool stuff, yeah.
I think, you know, probably story-wise, I definitely put the Coppola one above. It's got like a lot more going on, and there's it incorporates a lot the found footage some more.
Mm-hmm.
There's more, I think, a mystery element and investigation that's going into things, and the practical effects are really cool.
It's absolutely, it's insane, it's mind-blowing. Wow. At times
they do like all in camera effects, like while they're filming. Cool. They're doing the effects,
and Dracula has a sick fucking suit of armor in that.
How's Van Helsing in that one?
Oh, that's the Anthony Hopkins. He's unhinged.
Oh, right.
He's over the top. He's over the top. It's an over the top movie for sure.
Cool.
Yeah, you've got Keanu with a bad accent, but he's trying his darndest. You know,
he's always trying his darndest.
Trying to think of other portrayals of Dracula. I guess they're not adaptation. Dracula's in so many. That's what's cool. Yeah, is another, you can put Dracula in
Coppola
whatever you want.
Dracula.
Wait, which one?
Nick Cage plays Dracula.
Oh, fuck.
Really?
In Renfield.
Oh, yes.
The movie that just came out last year.
Coppola. Yeah.
I haven't. Yeah. I haven't seen it. And yeah. A couple
if
of my
you
friends
want
are
humor,
like, you gotta see it.
There it's, you go. There
they
you
say
go.
That it's good. I've heard people say it's good.
Speaking of Renfield,
I don't believe it.
That's the other, Renfield is absent.
Renfield's not even in this. Yeah. Yeah.
There's like a whole, yeah.
Oh, that's another thing you get in the Coppola one. You get, it's Tom Waits plays Renfield. I believe it's Tom Waits in that. And he's also nuts.
Very cool.
It was Tom Waits, right? Oh, anyway.
I'm sort of pitifully, yeah. I'm learning how pitifully ignorant I am about the story of Dracula through this past hour that we've been talking. So
Dracula is like the Beatles of monsters, you know what I mean?
Yeah, totally, totally.
you gotta read Dracula, you gotta watch that movie, and if you gotta play Symphony of the Night if you haven't played Symphony of the Night.
I haven't played
that's
Symphony
actually
of the Night.
It's greatly influenced by the Coppola movie. Like they take elements
really?
Of that, so there's so much like
okay.
cool shit going on with Dracula.
Kind of like how like Metroid in general is like by Alien, like that kind of a vibe.
Yes.
Where you're like, okay, it's a little on the nose, but see exactly what this is.
The big thing from that I think you can attribute to this starting, but like as a big element of this is they were really influenced in Symphony of the Night of like sort of that tragic aspect of Dracula, and that is big in that movie. But Christopher Lee Like, he doesn't have a lot of lines, but he even said in his portrayal, like, obviously the big things that stuck out were the sexuality, but also there is a, like, tragic sort of aspect to Dracula that he was trying to get across, you know, which I think is, mm-hmm. I don't know, that's what makes, like, the character, he gets across so much mm-hmm. with like, not a lot of dialogue, you know, it's just, like, in his mannerisms, his presence, so mm-hmm. yeah. Symphony of the Night maybe has a little bit of this to thank, though I guess that's present even all the way back in the original story.
Mm-hmm.
But he injected that element into this movie where they were not even seeming to go for that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So props to him as an actor.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He gives it like more than it deserves, almost. Not the story, but like the plot, like what the script is giving him, you know, like
he didn't have to go that hard
and he fucking went for it, you know? So yeah. Well, this movie whipped.
Oh hell yeah.
McKenna, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome anytime. Even if it's past your bedtime, we'll still drag you out.
She's typically on the other side of this wall when we're doing this.
Well, we'll you know, we're gonna have to call in we're calling in McKenna's backup because we need some expertise once in a while. Damn it, we need professionalism in this joint. Goo,
hello.
Have you picked a movie?
I have. I'm not going to reveal too much because we end up talking about it a little bit, and I feel like it'll be better if we just kind of like go into it. But I will say I wanted to pick a decade that we haven't covered, and it's shocking we have not watched a movie from this decade because it's considered like one of the best decades in the history of cinema. We've covered the years before and after this decade. But anyway, I picked a decade we have not covered, and then I picked a genre that we have not covered that I'm somewhat into, but not a full-on, like, expert on, you know. So, the movie we're going to watch is called A Touch of Zen.
Whoa. Never heard of it.
Yeah. I was doing some, you know, research. I'm like, okay, I wanted to do one from this that I wasn't familiar with as much compared to, like, I didn't want to do a movie I've seen, you know, so this will be new for me, new for you, and I'm excited.
What year did it come out?
1971.
We haven't watched a movie from the 70s. That's crazy.
That's when, like, all the good movies came out then.
Yeah. That's wild that we haven't done a movie from the 70s.
We've done, like, I think 1969 and, like, a 1980.
Yeah, and that's
1981.
True,
yeah, we've never done a movie from the 1970s at all.
Whoa, I love this. Okay, all right.
Yeah.
A Touch of Zen.
Yeah.
All right, well, listen to Flashback 64. It's awesome. It's so fun. And thank you all.
Then don't thank you.
And stay cool.